It's the worst time of the year. I turn on my radio. No Charlie Steiner. No Rick Monday. Please, come back.
Oh, come on back.
Before you know it, they'll be back on the field at Camelback Ranch.
Why can't this be spring training?
But our coverage of the Blue never stops.
AM 570 LA Sports.
This is off-season Dodger Talk.
Get in on the show by calling 866-987-2570 or hashtag Dodger Talk.
And now your host, David Massey.
Welcome to Dodger Talk. Only 8 days until pitchers and catchers report to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. And things are starting to feel like baseball. And unfortunately, our Los Angeles Rams came up short against the New England Patriots. So this is your, I guess, the way to get over that Super Bowl hangover. And baseball obviously will help you with that. And I really thought it was great that head coach Sean McVay took responsibility and accountability and did not try to point the finger at his players for the loss yesterday. And I thought it was refreshing that he said that he was outcoached and did not point the finger at any players that may have not played their best. And I thought that was refreshing. So kudos to Sean McVay, who's on the rise as one of the best NFL head coaches out there. He just got taken to school by the best, Bill Belichick. So, well, that'll be the last time we talk about the Super Bowl tonight, unless you need me to be your therapist as far as that goes as well. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Don't forget, not only do pitchers and catchers report 8 days from now, but the first Dodgers spring training game is right around the corner as well. February 23rd, their first game against the Chicago White Sox at Camelback Ranch. So, indeed, it is baseball season after the Super Bowl. And it felt like some baseball players were stepping over some dead bodies yesterday. It felt like as soon as the Super Bowl was over, baseball players were tweeting and Instagramming, "It's baseball season, it's baseball season." And the Rams' body wasn't even cold. So I love the excitement that baseball players had getting ready for the season. And I know the Dodger players are excited because they have a good team coming to Camelback Ranch. Despite what you hear, and I know the way you feel because you voiced your opinion this entire offseason, and I'm glad that Dodger fans have their feet on the ground and not really just going and grabbing at the new shiny toy that's still available in Bryce Harper. I know national perspective is, why don't the Dodgers pursue Harper? Why didn't they pursue Harper more? I know the LA Times has written about it, but is Bryce Harper a better fit for the Dodgers than, say, Nolan Arenado? And that's my biggest thing. I've maintained this throughout the season, that this was not a choice between Bryce Harper and AJ Pollock. It was not a choice between Bryce Harper and any other free agent on the open market. In my mind, it really is a choice between paying and committing those years and dollars to Bryce Harper or having an opportunity to pursue and commit years and dollars to a guy like Nolan Arenado, who plays a premium position and plays it really well. He's a gold glover. He is the gold glover at third base, and he is going to be a free agent at the end of this season. And I know there's some wishful thinking in the Mile High City that he's going to agree to an extension. I don't see that happening. I don't see Nolan Arenado agreeing to an extension and forfeiting his first chance of going on the open market. And already, from what I've been told, there's a lot of teams that want his services. In fact, more teams probably will pursue Nolan Arenado when he hits the open market next year than they are pursuing Bryce Harper, who plays the corner outfield, and really, has he had a great last 2 years? Not really. He really hasn't. And I can't believe or don't understand why in baseball, of all sports, why people and critics don't put more stock into what a player does in the postseason. It seems like it only comes to pitchers when people point to that. They praise Bumgarner and tear down Kershaw. And, you know, that's fair. Bumgarner did carry his team to the World Series. Kershaw has stepped in a couple of holes and has stumbled along the way. But why don't they look at that for position players? And in fact, if you looked at it at Bryce Harper's postseason career, he's only hitting .211 in the playoffs in his career. And he has had equal talent surrounding him in Washington compared to what the Dodgers have had the last 5 or 6 years. So I'm sorry. This is not a house call. This is a David Vasse call. If you had to ask me who I'd rather invest years and dollars in, would it be Nolan Arenado or would it be Bryce Harper? And in my mind, it's Nolan Arenado, hands down, not even a question. So all the people that want to point the finger at the Dodgers and ask why aren't they pursuing him, is this an Andrew Friedman small town market mentality not pursuing Harper? No, he just doesn't fit the team as well as A.J. Pollock does this year. And also, if you're I hate to break this to everybody, you don't become a billionaire by just throwing money around. And that's not how Mark Walter became a billionaire, I'm sure. That's how the majority of the major league owners did not become billionaires, by throwing their money around. So if you had to be prudent and choose and decide who you're going to invest dollars in, would it be Arenado or Bryce Harper? My opinion is Nolan Arenado. And obviously, the Dodgers have left that window open for themselves to be able to pursue Arenado. And also another guy by the name of Anthony Rendon, who was Harper's teammate in Washington. And when I was back there in the nation's capital with the Dodgers, people that cover that team and around that team were actually debating, who would you give the money to? Would it be Harper or would it be Rendon? Who's more valuable to this team, Anthony Rendon or Bryce Harper? So if there's a debate on his own team in his own city and who is more valuable and who would you give money to, Harper or Rendon, how can you tell me he's a slam dunk for the Dodgers? It just doesn't add up. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Now, I will say this. He's a perfect fit for the San Diego Padres. And I talked to a couple of people on their staff before Christmas, and they thought it was an impossible dream of the Padres opening the wallets for Bryce Harper. Now, it seems more realistic. He did get married at the third most famous Mormon church in America in San Diego. And let's face it, not many people are showing up at Petco Park. He could put some fannies in those seats. The Dodgers draw 3 million people already. They've been to back-to-back World Series. So the level of desperation here is completely at different extremes. So that's how I feel about Bryce Harper. San Diego is the perfect spot for him. In fact, that's where I believe he'll sign. I think at the end of the day, he's going to San Diego, and I think that would be great for that franchise and, frankly, great for the division, great for a rivalry. Right now, there's basically no competition for the Dodgers in the NL West. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Now, all of this came to my mind and really started to get my blood boiling because I was on high heat with Harold Reynolds and Matt Vasgersian on MLB Network this morning. And man, they were coming at me like I was Andrew Friedman. They were not giving me a chance. I felt like I was on a firing line. Those guys, having the machine guns out at me with these Dodger questions that, I answered honestly and with the information that I have. Now, what they did throw at me were a couple of trade scenarios for Corey Kluber specifically, and I threw the question back at them, would you leverage the Dodgers' best minor league and major league ready assets for Corey Kluber or JT Realmuto? And that stumped them a little bit, and I think it's a fair question. Who do you believe the Dodgers need more, Corey Kluber or JT Realmuto? Keep in mind, Kluber is under team control for 3 more years. Realmuto is under team control for 2 more years. Catcher is a very thin position these days in Major League Baseball. Kluber is a 20-game winner, and a lot of people believe the Dodgers do need one more starter in the rotation for the playoffs. Me personally, I take JT Realmuto. The Dodgers, in my mind, have the 3 guys. They got Buehler, they have Rich Hill, and they have Clayton Kershaw for a rotation. Now, those guys have to pitch to their capabilities, and honestly, Buehler and Rich Hill have done a pretty good job of doing that. Kershaw has at times, so that's how I feel. I go, if you had to ask me hypothetically, who would I leverage my assets for? Would it be Kluber or Real Muto? I would say Real Muto. Also, keep in mind, Real Muto plays every day. Kluber pitches once every 5 days for you. And also, Real Muto's a right-handed bat. Plus, another caveat to JT Real Muto putting on a Dodger uniform is AJ Ellis passed down how Rick Honeycutt prepares for a game with his starting pitchers to Real Muto when he was with the Marlins a couple of years ago. So it would be a seamless transition. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Speaking of Real Muto, when I brought him up to Harold this morning, he threw out flippantly that the Dodgers would probably platoon JT for 100 games. And that's ridiculous. And it is even more ridiculous to assume that Real Muto would play 162 games. Obviously, no catcher would do that, but the Dodgers probably, if they were able to acquire him or, you know, if they decide to go with Austin Barnes, whoever gets the lion's share of the catching, but more specifically, a guy like Real Muto is going to get the lion's share like Grandal got the last 4 years and would play about 140 games. And this whole, I guess, negative narrative about the Dodgers platooning their players at the end of last year, I feel like it's a false narrative. Platooning those players became a necessity when it was becoming apparent those guys were not hitting left-handed pitching, specifically Cody Bellinger and Max Muncy. Now, if you look at Muncy's year in total, his splits against left-handed pitching was pretty good. But if you were watching the games in September, you would see he was not having good at-bats and his numbers were declining against them. Cody Bellinger, for the entire year, only had 6 home runs against lefties and batted .226. Jock Peterson, we all know, was a right-handed pitching killer, but not very good against lefties. Yasiel Puig, reverse splits the last 3 years. Could not hit lefties, could hit righties. So he really wasn't a help until September when the Dodgers helped him see the pitching that he could thrive on and feast on, and he hit .292 with 8 homers. So that narrative is false to me. I will say this. The Dodgers, I think they got sucked into the Brewers' manipulation of their pitching and trying to match them tit for tat by pinch hitting David Freese in the first inning. I'm not on board with that type of extreme platooning. And that's not the platooning I'm talking about. I felt like those two front offices were trying to show how smart each one was and really didn't let the players decide those games until probably Game 7. And for me, that's where it kind of went sideways. But if you look at September, the platooning helped the Dodgers win 18 games to force a game 163 and win the division for a 6th consecutive year. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. We're going to take your phone calls. Plus, coming up next, one of the under the radar rising stars for the Dodgers last year, Caleb Ferguson. He'll join us next on AM570 LA Sports. Baseball is right around the corner. Dodger baseball going after their 7th consecutive NL West championship is right around the corner, and it all begins 8 days from now at Camelback Ranch as pitchers and catchers report to Glendale, Arizona. Welcome back to Dodger Talk. This is David Vasse with you until 8 o'clock tonight. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. We'll get back to your phone calls in just a moment, but this man is one of the forgotten Dodgers of 2018, and I think he prefers it that way because he was a weapon for the Dodgers coming out of the bullpen last year. Where would they have been without Caleb Ferguson coming out of the bullpen for the majority of the second half last year? And he was phenomenal doing that. As a reliever last year, he won 7 games and had an ERA under 3. And Caleb joins us from his home in Ohio. I think he has defrosted from the Arctic vortex. Are you okay over there, Caleb?
Yeah, finally starting to warm up a little bit over here, so it's actually nice to get outside and go do something other than sitting inside on the couch because it's been so freaking cold.
Yeah, what were you doing during that Arctic vortex that hit Columbus as well as the rest of the Midwest?
Nothing at all. You really couldn't go out and do anything with how cold it was. So it was definitely miserable for a couple of days, that's for sure.
Caleb, I mentioned you went under the radar last year, and not many people are talking about you this year either, and I think you prefer it that way. When you look back at your season, A, did you like going under the radar and being as effective as you were, and have you had a chance to take a look back at it?
Yeah, you know, I don't get too caught up in, you know, being the guy everybody wants to talk about. You know, I just go out and try and do my job every time and try and get the team in a position to either keep winning the game or to go on and win a game. You know what I mean? Either way, just whenever my name's called, I just try and go out there and do my job. You know, I don't try and focus on being the guy in the spotlight or anything like that. Just go out there, do my job, get guys out, and let the rest kind of do its thing.
Did you embrace the relief pitcher role right away? I mean, you came up as a starter, or did you embrace it more with the success that you had every time you went out there?
I think it was a little bit of both. I think the success came from the confidence, and I was able to gain a lot of confidence coming out of the bullpen. You know, every time you go out there, even though it's just for an inning, maybe even for a batter, you knowing you get that one guy out or you can get three clean outs in an inning versus having to start where I struggled so much. I embraced it, obviously. You know, that's the only way you're going to have success is taking something and running with it. But I definitely think the bullpen definitely helped me out in getting, like, confidence and knowing, like, I'm good enough to get big league hitters out. So I'm definitely fortunate to be in the bullpen my first year in the big leagues and learn how to get some hitters out in some big situations.
What's the biggest thing that you learn as far as attacking hitters coming out of the bullpen?
I think it's just learning to trust your stuff and going right to your strengths. You know, you don't really have time, if you will, to set guys up for later on in the game, later, like let's say they're third at bat, right? If you're starting, you're going to pitch them a different way from, like, you're going to pitch the leadoff guy different in the third inning than you would in the first inning.
Right.
Where in the bullpen, you're coming right out of the bullpen and you're going right to your strength. So I think for me it was knowing that my best is better and knowing that going right to my best is going to beat them. So I think just coming out of the pen, trusting my stuff and you know, really throwing everything as hard as I can definitely helped.
Yeah, and when you talk about your best, it's your fastball and your curveball. And I saw you on MLB Network a couple of weeks ago, and you said the only time you got nervous talking to somebody last year was Sandy Koufax. Number one, I'm offended.
Sure.
I thought you were nervous every time you spoke to me. And for you to say that you were more nervous talking to Koufax than you were to me is a little offensive.
I'm sure it is.
Oh, I never knew that conversation took place. What was that about? Did you seek him out, or did it just happen by coincidence to run into him?
No, actually, Honey, after I came out of that game against the Braves, Honey kind of asked me how I felt, and I told him I felt good. Fastball feels good. Curveball still feels off. And I did. I lost my curveball near the end of the year. I wasn't able to strike with it really at all. So he just told me, he said, you know, well, he literally said, well, Sandy's here, and we'll just go up and talk to him after the game. And really, he acted like it was no big deal. And as soon as he told me that, I'm like, go upstairs and talk to Sandy Koufax? Like, all right, you know, like, that's crazy, but this guy's acting like it's not a big deal, you know? So, yeah, I mean, we went up there. I showered up and whatever and changed in my street clothes, and Honey calls me into the video room, and I mean, we sat there for 30 to 45 minutes talking about curveballs.
Wow.
So that's now, that's how I'm throwing it now. And it's definitely, I guess, the pitch, the shape of the pitch, I guess, if you will, has changed.
Yeah. So what did he show you? The grip of the pitch and how to get more comfortable with it?
The way he showed me made me a little bit more comfortable with it, but it's a little bit newer of a grip. A couple things, like it's the same same. I hold it the same way. My thumb, the ball is more buried into my hand, and I'm holding it pretty much with my ring finger and my middle finger. So the way I throw it now is I should have a blister on the inside part of my ring finger, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. I got to ask you, Caleb, the technical part of it, a lot of us don't understand it, and I guess a lot of us don't understand how you digest that when you're sitting across from Sandy Koufax and he's actually giving you tips on how to pitch. How were you able to shake yourself and be able to retain everything that he was saying instead of just being in awe of who was talking to you?
I mean, that's a good question. You know, I think it definitely helps whenever you have guys. I mean, when you have Clayton Kershaw walking around your clubhouse and you can ask Clayton a question any time of the day and he's going to give you an answer, I think really helps to not go into an awe, if you will. And even guys like Rich Hill, who has mastered the curveball. But I mean, there's times where I was in awe, and then there's times where, you know, he's saying something and like I'm fully locked in on the conversation. I was fully locked in the entire time. Like if somebody would have came by and said hi to me, I probably wouldn't even notice that they said anything.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to interrupt that.
Yeah, you know, I think whenever you have a guy like Sandy come up and start giving you all his tips, I think you're going to listen to every word that comes out of his mouth and not go into that all, if you will.
Yeah, I've heard that his hands are abnormally big. His fingers are abnormally long. So
yeah,
how does that translate to you? So I've heard that the things he can do to manipulate the baseball, a lot of guys that he teaches can't do it. So how are you able to do that?
I mean, that's a good question. He showed me a couple of his grips that I tried to, like, grip, and there was no chance. So I guess I'm just lucky enough that my hand's just big enough to throw the curveball grip that he showed me.
Wow.
But other than that, I have no chance of doing anything else that he did on the ball. Yeah.
Hey, at least one of them sticks, right?
Yeah, exactly. If I can get one of his curveballs, I think I'll be pretty successful.
So once you had that conversation with him, were you able to strike that pitch the way you wanted to the rest of the year?
Yeah, the very next day during BP, I think I probably threw like 15 curveballs in a row, which is probably not the smartest thing to do, but I went out there and threw a bunch of curveballs, and it did. It felt a lot better, and I definitely was able to strike for it and swing and miss for it now. So it's been good.
Yeah, I would say so. Your season was good, too. Caleb Ferguson is our guest. You can follow him on Twitter and on Instagram at @IM_Ferg. So that's where you can find Caleb Ferguson, and you definitely want to follow him because he is going to be a big part of the Dodgers in 2019 and years to come. Now, he lives in Columbus, Ohio, and I've seen on your Instagram that you do go to the hockey rink to support the NHL Columbus Jackets. So how many games have you been to, and does the Ferguson family have season tickets to the rink?
We do not. And I've actually only been to two games this offseason. But I do, I don't follow hockey religiously. I enjoy going, and I think hockey's a really fun sport to watch. You know, it's really fast-paced, and both games I've been to went to shootouts, and there was a fight in both of the games. So I go to hockey I got to see, so... I just enjoy going to them. I think it's a lot of fun. It's just you can make kind of a fun night out of it.
Did they ask you to sing the national anthem?
No, and I'm pretty glad they didn't. That video somehow made its way on the internet, and it's not my strong suit.
For those that don't know the story, Caleb was part of the fantasy draft for the Dodgers, and the veterans had the rookie sing the national anthem before they started the fantasy draft, and actually backstage Dodgers was there to capture it, and they were showing those episodes over the weekend. I hate to break it to you, Caleb.
Yeah, I got tagged on Twitter and Instagram, so I had to refresh my own memory about it, and you know, now my whole family saw it, and
Who was the brainchild? Who was the brainchild of that? Who demanded that you do that?
Kershaw
did?
Yep, Kershaw gathered everybody around in his dining room where the draft was about to happen and said, "Sing the anthem, Fergie." So, and you know, you're not going to say no. So, give it all you got.
I thought Justin Turner might have had a big hand in it because he was standing right next to you, just doing everything possible not to laugh out loud.
I looked at him and saw him laughing into his hat, so I started laughing, and then I messed it up. So, whatever.
Oh, man. Hey, you'll be back this year, and you won't be the youngest guy on the team. You'll have some service time, so you don't have to do that this year.
Yeah. Let's hope not, but if I do, it's all part of it. So those guys all went through it.
All right, Caleb. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Can't wait to see you out there at Camelback Ranch. When are you heading out to Arizona?
I'm flying out on Friday.
All right. Yeah. So you're going to be on time.
Yep. Going to be on time. A couple days early. Get out there. Get used to the warm weather and get everything all settled in. So I'm excited.
Strike that curveball.
Yeah.
You're going to throw that curveball right away?
Oh, yeah.
Nice. All right, Caleb. Thanks a lot for coming on the show. Like I said, appreciate it. I know we're keeping you up past your bedtime back there, so thanks for hanging in there. And like I said, it was a real joy to watch you blossom last year, and I can't wait to continue to cover your growth with the Dodgers. And it's always fun talking to you before the games too, so thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yep, no problem, David. Thank you.
There he goes. One of the good guys, Caleb Ferguson. Love that guy. Him and Bueller together, wow, entertainment before a game. I'll just put it that way. Those guys are fun to be around. So though I know Bueller gets all the headlines, and rightfully so, but Caleb Ferguson, he's a big part of what the Dodgers are going to do in 2019, and he was a big part of what they did in 2018. So Caleb Ferguson, keep that name on your radar. All right, when we continue here on Dodger Talk, we will get back out to the phones and also bring up something else that the hot stove crew threw at me this morning, and I want to get your take on it. It's about championship rings. How do you measure players? Do you measure them by the rings, or does that not mean anything to you? I'll explain when we continue on Dodger Talk on AM570 LA Sports. Dodger baseball right around the corner. 8 days until pitchers and catchers report to Camelback Ranch in Glendale, Arizona. The first Cactus League game is February 23rd against the Chicago White Sox right here on AM570 LA Sports. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. And we mentioned in the first segment my thoughts on the whole Bryce Harper free agency and how it relates to the Dodgers. Yes, the Dodgers gave themselves an opportunity to sign Harper for a shorter-term contract for a higher annual salary than any other player in baseball history. It appears, though, that signing A.J. Pollock is a signal that he has decided that he wants the Giancarlo Stanton type of contract. He wants to eclipse that, and he and his agent Scott Boras are intent on doing that, and they should. They should go after that contract because Bryce Harper is a better player than Giancarlo Stanton, but I don't believe that Bryce Harper is a better player for the Dodgers at this point in time than Nolan Arenado will be next year. The Dodgers, I believe, will be coming off their seventh consecutive NL West title after this season and can add a guy like Arenado, who grew up a Dodger fan, who went to El Toro High School in Southern Orange County. His favorite players were Karros, Green, those type of guys. And who wouldn't want Nolan Arenado playing third base for the team he grew up rooting for? Local credibility, having guys that are from the area that are at his level means a lot. Now, I know Harper doesn't live that far away in Vegas, but he just doesn't fit. And honestly, I feel he's a little overrated. You look at his season last year, a tale of two halves. He was awful the first half of last year. And don't forget about what happened 2 years ago when Joe Maddon and the Cubs intentionally walked him, I believe, like 11 straight plate appearances. And after that, his season went into the tank because it got in his head so much. So I'm all in for Nolan Arenado, and I believe it's not a choice between Harper and Pollock or any other free agent out there. It's a choice between Harper and Nolan Arenado. Now, any team can't continue to dangle that carrot out and say, well, next year we're going to save our money for this free agent class. Next year we're going to save our money for the following free agent class. No, you can't continue to do that because then you start to lose credibility with your own fan base. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Now, I mentioned I was on a hot stove with Matty V and Harold Reynolds, and they threw out something that, you know, I reacted to, that Clayton Kershaw is on that Dodgers Mount Rushmore. And I said, hold up. You have to win a World Series to be on the Dodgers Mount Rushmore. And Kershaw has not done that. And my question to you is, do you believe that you have to have a ring to be on the Dodgers Mount Rushmore or any other Mount Rushmore? In my mind, you know, the standard in Los Angeles with the sports teams is a championship, or really, you're not validated in your career. Shaquille O'Neal talked about that up until he won in 2000. Will Chamberlain talked about that once he got to the Lakers as well. And we all know Jerry West was haunted by all those losses to the Boston Celtics. He finally won one, and unfortunately, Elgin Baylor never did. And maybe that's part of the reason why he's not in the conversation for greatest player of all time. Now, the Lakers and people that played with Elgin, like Jerry West, have been very vocal in saying he is one of the greatest players of all time, but maybe he, like others like Malone and Barkley, don't get the recognition because they didn't win the championship. And like I said in the first segment about Harper only having a .211 postseason batting average, why don't people in baseball use or refer to players' performance, good or bad, in the playoffs? You look at a guy like Steve Garvey, who played in over 11 playoff series in his career and was the NLCS MVP twice and also won a World Series and was a big part of the Dodgers winning the World Series in 1981. He batted over .300 in the playoffs, but whenever his name comes up for debate in the Hall of Fame, nobody talks about that. In the other sports, they do. They talk about Tom Brady and how clutch he's been and how good he's been with his 6 Super Bowl rings. In the NBA, Jordan, LeBron, that's how he's measured. Magic, 5 rings, that's how he's measured. That's the way he measures he and Larry. He's got 5, Larry's got 3. So why in baseball don't we measure players that way? And I don't feel like I'm being too harsh when I say to be on the Dodgers Mount Rushmore, you have to have a World Series championship. And unfortunately, Kershaw does not have one. Now, if you had to ask me about 5 guys I would put up on the Dodgers Mount Rushmore, now, I know everybody automatically includes Tommy Lasorda and Vin Scully. I don't. Those guys are in a class of their own, and I'm just talking about players because that's who we're measuring. We're not measuring greatest broadcaster, one of the greatest Hall of Fame managers. They're in their own class, along with Walter Alston. Jackie Robinson, Sandy Koufax, Fernando Valenzuela, Steve Garvey, Duke Snider, and Maury Wills would probably be on my Mount Rushmore. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. Now, I don't want to get into a whole Fred Rogan, cliche topic of who would be on your Dodgers Mount Rushmore. The question is whether or not you need a ring to be on that Mount Rushmore. Let's go out to Lewis in San Francisco. You're on Dodger Talk with David Vasse. Hi, Lewis. Lewis, you're on the air.
Me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
That's you. Hi, Lewis.
Yeah. Hi, Dave. And also want to compliment you for pushing back on Matty V and Harold Reynolds this morning. Matty V has never gotten over 1988, so you never get a straight view of his take on the Dodgers, and you did a good job.
All right,
My question, though, to you, and you've summarized some of the topic, and you know the national media is obsessed with Harper and Machado and is just frustrated that they can't say where they're going. But from a Dodgers perspective, the Dodgers have proved in the past 5 or 6 years that they can get to the World Series. They have built great teams. I think the best, frankly, in my lifetime, and I'm over 60. But the thing that I still can't quite get a pulse on up here and with all I read is, what does ownership think is really going to put them over the top? In other words, Realmuto seems to be clearly the obvious one, but it seems that because Jeter screwed up, he's wanting way too much, and the Dodgers are being smart and saying, well, you know, we'll give you some, but not all.
Yeah, I don't think the Dodgers feel like if they don't get Realmuto, they're not in position to go deep in the postseason. Would they like to have him? Obviously, yes, but it looks like the Reds right now are the front runners with the package they've given them, and the Dodgers obviously have two very good young catchers and a good team already, but I'm with you. Realmuto on the Dodgers, if they were able to acquire him, they would be, for me, the odds-on favorite to win the National League.
All right, so quickly coming back, if they can't get and they don't feel he's worth it, you've summarized greatly the Harper case. What about a guy like Marwin Gonzalez, who can play everywhere, who is also a lefty potential at second base if Max Muncy can't do the job?
Yeah.
That to me seems a lot.
I don't think the Dodgers they're so close to that luxury tax threshold, and I think they've made it very clear that they prefer not to go over it. And if they sign Marwin Gonzalez, it would definitely put them over quite a bit. So, and also, Lewis, they have enough left-handed hitters, and Kike and Chris Taylor are going to get quite a bit of time at second base. Thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it. Let's go out to Santa Clarita. Tony, you're on Dodger Talk with David Vassay. Hi, Tony.
Hey, David, if we just forget about this Realmuto and make Barnes be the utility guy and then bring in either Ruiz or Smith for 2 months and then the other guy comes in for 2 months, like each give them each a 2 month tryout in when the real season starts, and whoever does best stays after the All-Star break. Because if we play Russell Martin too much, he's going to be worn out at the end, and we got to save him for the playoffs to handle the big hitters, because all these other catchers can't handle the big hitters, you know, calling pitches. So I think Russell Martin should be like a relief catcher. When the relief pitcher comes in, Martin comes in, and when the relief pitcher comes in, those two rookies leave. And just Barnes be the utility
Jeez.
Guy.
Jeez, talk about platooning, Tony. I don't know about that. That seems complicated.
Not both of them at the same time.
Yeah, it seems lacking continuity, really. So are you saying carry three catchers at the same time?
Barnes will be the utility guy, and Ruiz or Smith, just one of them comes up.
See, I'm not a big fan of that, Tony, because catching in itself is the toughest position on the field. And I was never a fan of Austin Barnes moving from second base to catcher, and I was happy when the Dodgers settled on just having him catch, because that's a handful in itself, considering how much the Dodgers emphasize defense catching-wise. So I'm not on board with that, but I appreciate the phone call. Let's go out to Montclair. Art, you're on Dodger Talk with David Vassay. Hi, Art.
Hey, David, how you doing? Just driving home from work, listening to the show. Great job, as always. Just called to chime in and comment on what you're talking about. I think Kershaw does need a ring to be considered one of the greatest. Like you mentioned, all those other players, like Barkley and them, you have to have the ring to be considered at the top of whatever team you're playing for. So we all know Kershaw is great. To be considered one of the greatest, absolutely he needs a ring. The other thing I want to chime in on, and I'm sure many of the Dodger fans listening to you right now, you talked about Arenado. Who wouldn't want that guy, man? He's one of the greatest hitters around. He always kills the Dodgers when he comes to Dodger Stadium. But what's the Dodger fans thinking? What do you do with JT? Beloved JT, we all love him. You know, you bring Arenado in. What do you do with JT? If he has a great year again this year, you know, hard to say what to do with him. So just your thoughts and comments on that. I'll listen on the radio and keep up the great work.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate it. Yeah, nobody loves Justin Turner more than I do, and I'm not trying to shove him aside for Nolan Arenado. Fact is, the business of baseball shows that Justin Turner only has one more year left on his contract after this season. And what makes Justin Turner so great is that he's a baseball player. And the Dodgers have used him at third base since they acquired him. They originally acquired him to play second base and be a utility guy, filling the shoes of Nick Punto and Skip Schumacher. And he has proved to be more than that, obviously, being a finalist for the Gold Glove at third base the last couple of years. And really, if it came down to the Dodgers having the opportunity to sign a transcendent player like Nolan Arenado, I don't think there would be anybody happier to have a guy like that as his teammate than Justin Turner. And when you talk about the Dodgers lacking that right-handed pop and that right-handed bat, the Dodgers would have a guy in Justin Turner that could play some third base when you want to give Arenado days off, and also could be a first baseman. You know, you can move him to first base. He's a baseball player. He could play that position. And maybe even if you're talking about, well, you know what? I take that back. I was going to say second base, but he can handle covering that area of the infield, no doubt in my mind. And he shows that when the Dodgers shift and move him to that side of second base. But considering the history that he's had with his knees, I don't think I would want to put him in harm's way of trying to turn a double play at this point in time in his career. So no doubt he has the range for this day and age of baseball where the ball is not being put in play and the Dodgers having that type of positioning. But I really believe that he could play a really good first base. And if the Dodgers feel strongly about Cody Bellinger as an outfielder and they were able to add a guy like Nolan Arenado, then I think both those guys would acquiesce for the good of the team and trying to win. But I think this all has to play out. I think we have to see how good of a season Cody Bellinger has this year. I have no doubt Justin Turner is going to have as good of a season as he's had the last couple. I don't believe Father Time is catching up to him just yet. So we'll see how it plays out. But when you have an opportunity, and if the Dodgers do have that opportunity of acquiring a player of Nolan Arenado's caliber after this season via free agency, nothing should stop you from signing him. 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. I also asked you before when we started the show, who would you leverage your assets for? Would it be Corey Kluber or JT Realmuto? Tempting both guys. The Dodgers have been rumored to be linked in trade conversations. They have not been able to come up with a match with the Marlins or Indians. And when I hear the Indians front office brass do interviews nationally, it doesn't seem like they are very motivated to trade Corey Kluber or even Trevor Bauer at this point in time. I really believe, hearing from their side of things, that they will go into the season with Kluber and Bauer on their team, and we'll see how well they fare. If they're out of the race by the trade deadline, no doubt Bauer and Kluber will be on the block again, and maybe the Dodgers can circle back. And maybe that's another lesson here as far as having reactionary opinions to what the Dodgers do and don't do before opening day. If they're not able to land Kluber or Realmuto before opening day, why should they just trade away guys for the sake of trading away guys? Right now, it's going to be tough to carry Jock Peterson and Alex Verdugo on the roster to start the season. Both left-handed hitters. Alex, I believe, will be given the opportunity to hit lefties and righties, at least to start out with. But you got Cody Bellinger. You got Max Muncy. And A.J. Pollock apparently is going to play the majority of center field. So how do both of those guys fit into the outfield? It's going to be tough to squeeze them in. But if Kluber is still an Indian and Realmuto is either traded or remains a Marlin, why wouldn't you try to hold on to both of those guys and see how the Indian season unfolds and whether or not the Marlins' asking price changes up? 866-987-2570, pound blue for our AT&T subscribers. I'm a believer on any LA team's Mount Rushmore. A player has to have a championship ring on their finger, and multiple would enhance your case of being on my Mount Rushmore. If you look at the Lakers, I'm not putting anybody that did not win. Nick Van Exel or Eddie Jones is not going on my Mount Rushmore. I'm trying to grab, is LeBron on that Mount Rushmore if he doesn't win a ring? No, he's not on it. And really, I don't believe he'll be identified as a Laker when his career is over with, unless he does win one and actually multiple championships. But he has turned the energy back on at Staples Center, and it's great to have him back on the court. But if he does not win a championship ring, how do you put him in the same class as Shaquille O'Neal, who won three with the Lakers? Kobe, obviously five, Magic five. I'm not sure how he fits in. So the point is, I don't need your five Mount Rushmore players for the Dodgers. My point is, if you don't have a ring, you're not on it. We have to say hi to our friend Isabel in Anaheim, who's been on hold for a long time. Isabel, happy new year, and thanks for calling.
Oh, you're welcome, David. Hey, yeah, you do need to wear a ring. You know what I mean. And, I'll take Cooper, but they're going to do – I better just wait for him. The Cleveland not going to do it now. Then just anyway, just wait. But listen, well, Harper, I'm not a big Harper fan, so I agree with you. I just think he's just a little bit overrated, if you ask me. So anyway.
He might be more of a star than a player. There might be more flash than substance to his game.
Yeah, that's true. So, and one is, I've always wanted to say, I know pitchers and catchers, that they go to the 15th. When did the position player, when did they go to spring training?
The first full squad workout is February 17th. That's when everybody gets together, and that's when I'll be there. Excuse me, February 18th, and that's when I report. I don't go out for the pitchers and catchers. I let them warm up and get ready to go, Isabel, before I show up.
Yeah,
I don't want to waste my time watching them play catch. You know, I want to see ramped up throwing.
Yeah, well, listen. Oh, and I'm surprised you hadn't gotten that new announcer, the radio. You hadn't got him on.
Tim Neverett. Tim Neverett. You'll be hearing him in spring training. He'll be calling games in spring training. So listen for him. Thanks, Isabel. You're the best. Ronnie says hi. Yeah, we have to run, Isabel. So thank you for calling in. Yeah, Tim Neverett. Part of the Dodgers broadcast crew now, and he will be mixed in doing play-by-play for the Dodgers when Joe Davis is away, when Charlie Steiner takes some time off, and he'll be teamed up with the great Rick Monday right here on Dodgers Radio AM 570 LA Sports. That'll do it for Dodger Talk tonight. Our next show will be Friday night at 7 o'clock, and we will be taking your phone calls, and we will have another special guest on Friday night. Don't ask me who it is because I don't know just yet. But we will have somebody, just like Caleb Ferguson came through for us tonight. If you missed the Dodgers' southpaw, and if you missed his story about the conversation that Sandy Koufax had with him, you don't want to miss it. So podcast it at am570lasports.com. Thanks to Ronnie Fascio for all his help. Appreciate it. And we will talk to you Friday night. Have a great week. See ya. Like another perfect day.